The Infuse Show is brought to you by the team at The Sales Joint, sales solutions crafted for cultivators. Croptober Blues got you down? Visit www.thesalesjoint.com today to schedule a discovery call for consulting services. That's thesalesjoint.com. The Infuse Show is also brought to you by our fake sponsor, Kurt Vonnegut. My name is Jan Janssen. I come from Wisconsin. I work in a lumber mill there. Don't get the reference? So it goes. Let's do the show. Mike, Francesca, guys, I haven't seen you guys in a while. We've been on the road. We just did the show in Nashville. It's so good to see your faces again.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. Glad to be back in studio.
Yeah, definitely. No,
it's good to be back in Delaware. But we have a special show today. I'm excited for a number of reasons for our wonderful guest today. But Francesca, in particular, you just came from an event that I think is going to be a special interest to our guests and the 710 community out there that is very, very active in the state of Oklahoma. What? Tell us a little bit about the party that you attended out there.
I was so happy that while I was out there for Lucky Leaf in OKC, I was invited to the iSpire sponsored private like VIP dab party. And so it was at a bar and in the outdoor area behind the bar, like this beautiful patio, different stations set up. You can just kind of, you know, around the world dabbing almost. And it didn't take me visiting too many stations to be done.
But, that story.
It was really such a chill environment and people were so into their concentrates. I freaking loved it. It was totally my vibe.
Well, your vibe, it's going to be the vibe of a lot of people that listen to us. The rest of that story, by the way, is what my man LaVon Helm would call an adult portion. We can't really get into the rest of that. So look, without further ado, Mike, Francesca, I want to welcome our guest today. Today on the Infuse Show, we're going to play some pool, skip some school, act real cool, and talk all night. We're going to do it right because our guests today, all I have to do is call out Timber, and it goes over the rolling hills of Northwest New Jersey, the beautiful Garden State, home of the boss, home of the chairman of the board, home of our producer, Frank Rago, but it's also the home of the wonderful Jorgensen family, founders of Mystic Timber, the original wood-handed dabbers and roach clips. Our guests today, Colin, Deb, and Bruce, Jorgie Jorgensen, welcome to the Infuse Show. Thank you, guys.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Welcome to the Wood Show.
Yeah. it is a great setup. I mean, full disclosure, I talked to Colin and we kind of had a call before this and he was showing me around the studio. I love your logo. I love your workshop and everything you have going out there in the rolling hills of Jersey. And I can't wait to get into it today. Bruce, Deb, you guys are the co-founders of this incredible family affair that we call Mystic Timber.
That's right.
I know that your son is so proud of you. As far as the cannabis culture is concerned, I watch your Instagram videos all the time. I'm a big fan. And I saw you behind the wheel one day. And Colin just threw a question at you that I want to restate. So, Colin, it was a great question. You asked your dad about his first time smoking and what it felt like. And Bruce, could you take us into that?
Well, it was with a friend at work when I was 18. Went to this place afterwards, and I had very little knowledge of. I went through my whole freshman year of college in the 60s without partaking. It was offered all the time, but I was raised conservative.
Yeah.
So it took me a while to break into it. But the summer of 68, we smoked up, and. The moment I got there, I realized that was home, which is awesome.
I drove
home about 3 feet off the ground and in my 69 Cadillac.
68 Cadillac?
69. Oh, 59. Sorry.
Time warp.
Yes.
After effects of last night.
This car upgraded a year into the future. Is that
hard? And I smoked ever since. Yeah. And
like every day since almost, like, seriously,
pretty much
these guys are everyday, like, mostly flower and weekend dabs. We dabbed yesterday, but like usually it's on the weekends.
Yeah.
But they're like roach clip smoking, like old school.
I'm a diabetic and I consider it medical.
Absolutely. Yeah,
this is a classic. classic Wangi blunt beast.
This is what they smoke with every day.
Wow. No, we're gonna get into that particular tool in a little bit, but it's a great story. I love that sentiment that it's just I felt like I was home, and I think back on the chaos of the year 1968.
Oh,
my God, talk about needing a sesh. Big time. Deb, did you have a similar background, or you know, have to get past a conservative upbringing to kind of get into the plant?
I didn't have a conservative upbringing really, but where I went to high school in New Jersey, there wasn't really smoking then. And I graduated in 67, and I was the same way. I went to college and I hadn't smoked yet. And in fact, my first year, my roommate was a smoker, and I was like, ew. And it wasn't until my next year that my new roommate and I were curious. And that's what most people were at the time, curious. It wasn't illegal. So, and by partaking, it was like, wow, this is amazing. So yeah. It was a whole new thing.
That's incredible. I mean, did you have anything in your head that you had to get over, you know, Deb or Bruce, in terms of fear of what would happen when you're high or what being high would feel like or anything along those lines?
Nope.
Very first experience dispelled all doubt.
Yeah, just curious.
Realized that we've been lied to all that time.
Yeah.
Those days, you might you'd find yourself turning people. We call it being turned on when you first experience pot. First 3 or 4 years, the last years of the '60s,
everyone was curious.
It's almost the responsible stoner thing to do is turn people on.
Yeah,
yeah. It was
for the first time.
It was a huge. The transition between 67 and 71 was unbelievable.
Unreal.
Wow. Yeah.
In terms of the change in the culture. The widespread information through the underground press, as well as the college press, is just unbelievable.
I don't know if people were more curious at the time, but I don't know. It seems like people today are more hesitant and afraid. I guess it's because
the relentless
brainwashing and the DARE program and all that, you know.
That's exactly what I was thinking about when I asked the question, is that I know I had my reasons I didn't smoke for so long because I came into it very late in life, and they were all fear-based because of the whole DARE program, Nancy Reagan propaganda, war on drugs, all of that good parents taught their kids, you know, to not do drugs. And that was kind of just the line that you towed. And so I had to realize that this wasn't a danger before I could do it.
Sorry, we have a track that runs right behind our
railroad track.
And like once a day or once every couple of days, it's totally not on a schedule. This train will just come through. And I usually try to chase it, like go out there and get some shots of it. But yeah, it's comes and goes really quick. So sorry.
I think there's a pretty good probability there's really not a train there. You're just imagining it.
Residuals from last night.
Well, that's, if we're talking about growing up, to throw another shameless Springsteen plug in there for me, Colin, we were just talking about everybody kind of having to unlearn years of being lied to and propaganda as far as what we were told about this plant. I know that I'm speaking for Mike and Francesca on this one. Did you grow up knowing that your father was an old school cannabis culture icon, if you will, or was he just dad?
I didn't know that. I knew he was a cartoonist, and he would say, like, I drew off for High Times, or I used to draw for High Times, because he drew for High Times from the late 70s to the like mid 80s.
76, 83. Oh,
so, wow. But and I just thought he was a regular cartoonist for the magazine, because I myself have a background in cartooning and illustration. I wonder where I got it from, but I worked for magazines for like 25 years, but I never had a segment that said like Colin, or my art name is Kojo Art Juggernaut. I never had like Kojo Art Juggernaut's strip. And only very recently I got my mind blown, because I was going through the High Times archive on their website, and like he had a section called Georgie, like his name, his cartoon strip was called Georgie. That blew my fucking mind. Strip
yeah. Yeah. Half or something. But I was in there for about 10 issues a year for that period.
That's incredible. Like,
that's amazing. You actually were the cartoonist of High Times, Georgie. You were the only one that had your name stripped.
A lot of cartoonists, but everyone else is doing strips. And
that was amazing.
Basically spotted editorial work.
How did that come about, Bruce? How did you get in with High Times.
A friend of mine from college got a job there. And as soon as he got in a position to do so, he brought me in. And that was that. And then, you know, in magazines work in general, but High Times, like every place else, it's a matter of surviving the art directors. They change every year and a half, year 10 months sometimes. And I survived about 7 art directors before I finally got one that couldn't stand me on site.
You knew it was bound to happen at some point.
Yeah.
But he was an editorial cartoonist in college, and then we went out to the West Coast for a couple of years.
Where'd you live in the 60s?
We lived in Berkeley, and we lived in Oakland. Ooh. And we lived in San Francisco within that 2-year period.
Wow!
To save enough money to go on a motorcycle trip of Europe and North Africa.
These guys pretend they're not hippies, but you are like, as they won't use the word hippie, but I constantly say, like, you were in fucking Ashbury in 1869. That's a different version of hippie. There's like a spectrum of hippies. Yeah. They think you had to be doing like tantras on a mountain or something.
I'm not ashamed to be called a hippie or anything. It's just, I don't want it to be an insult to hippies.
But we always worked sort of traditional jobs. I was a graphic artist, and I got art director jobs at different places that we lived. And so when you're working in mainstream, it's hard to say you're a hippie, you know? I don't know.
It's changed.
Yeah, it's almost like the imposter syndrome, but that is definitely changed. And it's funny. This is kind of
generational. Oh, we lost your sound for a second.
Oh, I was saying that it's funny that generationally, I think it's so interesting to watch the culture of cannabis change, the industry of cannabis evolve, and you get to see it all in this one family where you guys get to compare and say, you know, you have your son saying, no, you were hippies, and you guys going, well, maybe you didn't understand what hippies really were. And, you know, it's just so fascinating to have that within one family dynamic.
That's true.
Well, especially on the East Coast, Francesca. Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, I think you have this dynamic more of people that are in California or West Coast now that have been a part of the OG culture from back when it first began. But on the East Coast, it's so new for many families. And the fact that you guys are in North Jersey, but have this lineage of you know, being with the plant for decades now and passing that on to your son and in his family and his community. That's the part that's really unique to me, is seeing this on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And our daughter too.
Yeah, Ace is also part of the company. She lives in Canada. She's our like head of sales and everything. She's like a huge part of the company. Oh. So it's kind of she's not here. She's in Canada. Otherwise we would have had her on. We didn't even think about it until today. Like, we're like, oh, we could have zoomed her in too, I guess. We could have done like a
but we'll give her a shout out.
Yeah.
Ace, just September Ace.
September Ace.
Nice. Oh yeah.
Yeah, yes.
We definitely want to get into her role and all your roles at Mystic Timber day to day. I'd be remiss, though, if I didn't ask this particular question, Bruce. I've been thinking about this. There's a cartoon of yours that we were looking at. Mike, Francesca, Frank, and I all took a look at an article that you were featured in. And it was, you had a cartoon in 1980 in High Times that was about lobbying. And it was somebody coming to a politician explaining all the good things that we could do, legalizing cannabis, forgiving people's punitive records,
right.
The significant lobbying effort. You remember that one in 1980?
Yeah,
it's one of my favorites. It's gotta be fun to be asked about something you did that long ago, but is it just frustrating as hell that we're still going through the stuff that you were?
You learn to cope with it. You learn to accept that. It never changes. You fight the same fight over and over.
The anti-abortion 5-10
years.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all still relevant. So like all those cartoons.
Just happened with Roe. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
But, you have to keep fighting for whatever it is that you support.
So many of his cartoons from that time are still relevant.
Yeah, I say 80% of my editorial cartoons. If you drop out the particular political people involved, you know, the presidents and so forth, and just go with the issues, nothing. Well, I mean, a lot has changed. But at the same time, we're still having to fight the same fights.
Yeah, no, it's your political. The faces have changed, and we have new and in some cases super villains to contend with.
Oh, well, geez. I mean, you know how to characterize that guy.
The content The content is the same.
I was going to say, what's really funny is like in the early 2000s, he was asking me like, hey, can you build a website for me? Because I was doing all this art and I have a whole online structure and whatnot. And it was like, well, you can create a whole new portfolio of stuff or you've got this work that's like 20 years old. And but so much of it was so timeless because we're still fighting those same fights. It was like, should we take off the dates? Because the dates tell you when the thing was made, but the things are exactly the same other than like certain things in cartoons always age, like TVs. You know, you don't have cell phones in old things. They're holding books and newspapers. Like, everybody's things have changed as technology changes. Yeah, exactly. Newspapers, you know, that kind of thing. But other than that, like, the issues that you drew about back then that was, like, politically insightful and like, talking to younger generations still resonate because it's the same. We're still fighting the same battles. Yeah,
and that's the beauty of it. That to me, as someone that sees that in present day, to see that you were drawing about this years ago, to me, just raises the bar of credibility for you as an artist and as
thank you very much.
It really does. I'm like, I immediately I want to see his other work to see what else he's like. Nostradamus here. Like, what else did he have, what else did he work on?
Well, Nostradamus is weed. Same stuff.
Well, God, I never thought we would get to this point, frankly.
Yeah.
For it to be legal anywhere, I really didn't.
When I was a kid, he said, I hope one of my dreams is that New Jersey at least legalizes in my lifetime. Like, while I'm still alive, I can smoke a joint and not be under that, like, scary government state, like, that you're doing something illegal, something that's, like, your hobby and that you enjoy.
People coming up, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I said people coming up don't realize what it was like. Mm-hmm. What it was like. There was a constant fear. You know, I've been busted. I did jail time.
I was going to ask. Yeah.
It was for one joint. I got 18 days. It was kind of, it was a learning experience. It was really, yeah.
And he served on weekends.
Yeah.
Overlooked.
Oh, really? Yeah,
jury duty, but it doesn't.
Community service.
180 hours of community service. I did it all by cartoon.
One joint.
So I did cartoons for the Dyfus, which is our local rescue shelter for abused women. I did stuff for various community services.
Let me explain it.
I don't want to go off on
let me, like, sorry. This is so friggin' nuts, fam. So they arrested him for weed, and then part of his sentence from the judge, they're like, oh, because you're a cartoonist, we can get you to do a bunch of stuff, anti-drug shit for the state or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah, seriously, like, you did, and then, but what did you do when, like, all the posters, they wanted to do anti-drugs? Well,
I was required as part of my sentence to do anti-drug posters for the grade school, the middle school, and the high school.
Oh my gosh. So
I did alcohol and tobacco.
Anti-alcohol and tobacco. You refused to draw anti-weed stuff.
I didn't touch cannabis.
Wow.
Stick to your guns.
A lovely, passive, peaceful way to protest that. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. Passive aggressive.
Got the last laugh.
I think that's sick, though, to be able to give a sentence of, like, we're going to turn your art into something that you're going to hate.
Yeah, something you believe in. That was kind of,
like, that's fucked up.
Yeah, weaponizing your art against your beliefs is kind of the antithesis of creating art.
Yeah.
So,
there's a lot of that going around.
Yeah.
It's like a zombie version of an artist where they kind of rewire your brain and force you to create something that you don't agree with. At least not smoking and not drinking for kids is a good message. So that's turned it into something positive.
You absolutely did.
I had no problem with that.
So I have to ask, because now my parents smoked when they were younger, took a long break, and then just recently started dabbling in again, and their reaction was, whoa, this is different weed than what we grew up with, in terms of, like, intensity, quality, all of it. And I didn't know if you have that a lot from people that, you know, took a break and started again, if you even noticed it since you didn't take a break, the significant difference.
Same with this, but I keep telling people, still the best day-to-day commercial weed I ever smoked was Columbia Gold in the 70s.
Wow.
Like, about 75 to 79. Best.
It's a legendary strain that doesn't
exist. A taste you've never had since. Every now and then I'll get a whiff of a taste of that in some strain. But that stuff was just unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah, and also Thai weed, 75. I tell a story.
The vintage.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are strains that don't exist.
I went to pick up some friend, 8 to 12 friends sitting in my living room. We were waiting for a phone call. I went and picked up the couple ounces of the Thai weed, fresh in. Brought it back, rolled a joint, lit it up, passed it. Woke up 2 hours later with a half a joint still in my hand. The whole room was asleep. Everett was unbelievable. That's a true story. I mean, you know, you can't make this shit up.
No.
Wow.
But I think generally, Deb. I was just going to say, I think the weed today is stronger.
Yeah, it's superior.
And of course, dabbing is stronger than that.
Way stronger. Weed from the 70s was like 2.3% THC. Now we're doing strains like their big sesh buddy Kathy will come over once every couple of weeks, and she'll bring all these new strains that she gets in the dispensary, and like some of them are insanely high THC, like ridiculous, 25%, 30%, 35%. Yeah, like compared to, it's 10 times as strong as what you were smoking in the 70s.
Prior to having things like lab testing to break out cannabinoids and talk about percentages and stuff, I mean, how did you evaluate good weed versus not? Was it only after you smoked it you could tell, or was it the smell test, you know, told you enough to tell you what was good and what wasn't? We want to learn from your years of knowledge.
What years did you deal weed while you were doing cartoon?
71 to about 80. I dealt weed when I started, it was $10 an ounce. And when it got up to $80 an ounce, it was all Sensimilla. That's when I stopped. And I just, from then on, I just bought.
So what's Sensimilla?
Seedless weed. It used to be loaded with seeds.
Part of your job was to pick the seeds.
Every pound you got, you had about 3/4 of an ounce of seeds.
If I had now,
millions of dollars for those seeds that you chucked.
Yeah. I used to throw them in the wind stove because, you know, what I never wanted to do is get busted for seeds.
Right.
Didn't you have a friend that got busted for a seed?
Yeah, a friend that got busted in 65 for one seed in New Jersey and spent 3 years in Rahway.
Oh my God.
Jeez.
Wow.
That's what I mean when I say that people today, you don't really have an idea of what it was like back in the day.
Now that weed is legal in Jersey, not federally legal, but it's legal here, we're doing these dab bar events. You were talking about going to that dab bar, like a Mystic Timber dab bar is such a fun event that we throw. Dirty Dank Jersey, like, is our dab tender. We set up at an event. We have like all of our tools. You can choose from any of our tools to use. And it's just so mind blowing that this is happening in New Jersey, like public, you know, like privately owned events. It's so nuts that you don't have to worry about a cop coming in seeing what's happening. It's like, this is really happening. It's legal. Everyone's getting high. Everyone's yelling timber. It's the fucking coolest.
Well, I mean,
want to talk about Mystic Timber. Yeah,
you did. Yeah. We'll yeah. You there. Said it. But I mean, on our show here, on Infused, Mike, we started off the year talking to a legacy grower from California, and she had to talk to our audience, be like, yeah, we know you love legal weed now. We were getting hit with rubber bullets back in the 80s and taking shots that way. So I guess it's just better to get more and more perspective.
The real stories, I think, for people like ourselves that weren't a part of that is a great way for us to learn and appreciate the battles that people did, because you can hear things, but when you hear it from the horse's mouth, it's so much more intriguing and so much more impressive to see that people battled through all this horse shit.
These guys met in college, and they met in Ohio. They went to Ohio State, Ohio U. There's two different Ohio schools, Ohio U, but Kent State's also in Ohio, and that happened while they were in college. And you guys all got sent home.
Yeah, we rioted and closed the school down.
3 days.
Tear gas. And
well played on getting school shut down too. That was a secondary win.
Monstrous offense.
How long did it take for all the colleges to shut down? Like they all shut down.
They all happened within the week.
Yeah.
The funny thing was that Four Dead in Ohio, CSN song. I heard that the day after.
What?
I swear to God. Now, memory is silly putty, so it's possible it was more than a day after it. My recollection is the day after Kent State happened, I'm walking down the street, and from the cannabis bookstore, I hear the radio going, and it's playing Four Dead in Ohio. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. It was a different age too, where you have socially conscious artists like Stephen Stills feeling that they have to address that right away. Yeah. Neil Young writing similar songs saying we have to address this right away because we need to foster some significant change here. It's funny because I think we could talk for hours, and now I'm sitting here saying there's another thing I want to ask. We all have some samples of Mystic Timber tools.
Yes, we do.
Francesca's got one, Mike's got one. These things are gorgeous. They're gorgeous. I wanted to ask this and start off. We want to know top to bottom just about everything we can about Mystic Timber since it was established in 2010. But there was one story that I saw. It was on another site. I think it was called Side Hustle School. It was a feature on Bruce. And could you tell us the story about why you initially designed this particular Roach Clip tool? I found so heartwarming. And if you could share that with our audience, I thought that would be lovely.
Sure. I had a friend named John who had a C5 break in his spine from a motorcycle accident. He had limited motility of his upper shoulders. So he could make his arms move, but he had no grip, of course. So, that was all. Then, he's strapped into a wheelchair.
And, he's quadriplegic. He could basically just move his head and his shoulders. That's
and he smoked tobacco and he smoked weed. And the weed helped with seizures. When people go on about medical marijuana is so important as a medicine. Long story short, if he wanted to smoke, someone had to stare, fold it up to his mouth, cigarette or joint. And it's sort of demeaning for him and pain in the ass for his caretakers. So I took a chopstick and put a roach clip on it, on the end, an alligator clip. And we could fit that into his cuff, the thing that, you wear a thing to
like
keep
an arm brace
curling.
Kind of, head on.
We put a cherry on it, put it in his clip, and he could smoke himself.
Wow. That is an incredible act of creation for restoring dignity to allow someone to administer their medication themselves or even their recreational tobacco themselves. Like that's incredibly powerful. Yeah. My uncle Rusty is a quadriplegic and, and he's an incredible guy. He's lives in San Diego. He's incredibly independent, but he wasn't always that way. So it's a lot of work to get there. And it takes people that are looking out for them to make sure that they are acknowledged as human beings that are able still, even in their disability. Right. That's really, really cool.
We hear that our tools are much easier to hold, like for arthritic patients.
People with dexterity and hand issues.
They love our tools because they're very easy to hold on to.
Tell us how much it helps.
They're light and they're just very easy to grip. So for dabbers as well, it's the same exact handle style. It's just longer.
Yeah. So it starts as a stick, and then in order to, when you grant it to pass it, you want to have something to be able to catch on to. So first I did one one set of dips at the bottom. Then I found it was more useful with both ends on a piece of size. So
Bruce, walk us through what took you from that initial chopstick contraption to creating a business and, creating a something that's been around for over 10 years now. So how'd that work for you?
I was working in wood shops at the time. I spent 12 years learning how to be a wood butcher and a finisher. Because the cartoon business had turned in such a way by the 90s that I was ready for something else. So I was doing that, and I made them for the one for John, and then I started making them for people who said, well, where's our roast clips? So for friends and stuff,
yeah, friends love
holidays
them.
And stuff.
Because they would always pass amongst each other another roast clip like John.
I mean, apart from a brief period in the 70s when we used forceps, we always used a conventional clip. And it just went from there. Then we started that. Doing different sizes, and then
about how you got the initial wood.
Oh, well, that's where I got all from the wood shop. I took their scrap because the scrap is good for furniture. Right. Or, actually, we were making lamps, But it was plenty big enough to make this stuff. So
right.
I had tons of scrap, and that was all my first 2 or 3 years of production were just.
Well, actually, too, we started out with using chopsticks, and
also the second part of the line.
Yeah,
the second part of the line. I found the most unusual chopsticks, and I found glass beads that I put on the figured out how to put them on the end of the chopsticks, and they matched the chopstick, and we made a whole bunch of these, and we went up to Canada because my daughter was going to school there. And we thought, well, let's see what a smoke shop would think of these. And so we had this presentation.
What year are we talking now, by the way? Let's put this in time.
It was 69. I mean 2000.
Yeah.
2009.
No.
Only 40 years difference.
It's all blurry. Yeah.
Everything's 68 or 69.
Together, 40 years one way or another. Could have been 2086.
Deb, you brought if I may, Deb, you brought up something I wanted to ask you. With your background in art, do you have any role in, like, one of the ones that was sent to us? I don't know if Mike has it or Francesca. Is the most? I think it's called Purple Heart. The wood, it's just gorgeous.
I think that's me.
There
I feel like a winner. Mm-hmm.
Look at
that's
that.
Nice. That's our most popular wood.
Yeah. Is it really? Do you have a role in selecting the types of wood or what you'll use and what you won't use? Because, I mean, the proof's in the pudding. These things are gorgeous.
Right.
We and all it's pretty not much like decided. And in the beginning, we just did assortment. We just had all different types of wood, and people couldn't ask for specific woods. We thought, boy, that would be too complicated.
They were literally, when you guys
and then
started,
Cullen came on board.
This is the time, like, when you're starting a company and you're starting a product that doesn't exist, it's like, you don't know where to go. You're just throwing a lot of stuff out there. So it was like, how many different handle sizes? We have like this was called the Beast line, and her line was called the Beauty line. It was like the Beauties and the Beasts. Eventually we got rid of the entire Beauty line because it was all chopsticks and like beads and stuff. And it was like, it's not the natural like handmade aesthetic that we want to push with Mystic Timber. So like we went with
because of the yes beads.
Yeah, these are beautiful. Those were beautiful too, but these are beautiful knowing that it's handmade like in New Jersey, all solid hardwoods.
They were really a bitch to brand too, because they're all different shapes.
But we started with like 17 woods. I counted them up when it was like canary wood, all these like crazy little like one-offs. And it was tough to keep an inventory of that. Like you'd have to work on every type of wood and keep stock of every type of wood in finished pieces. It's like such an overwhelming thing. And also like we found that like it's the same with the art world. If there's too many things to look at on a wall, you kind of see nothing. You know what I mean? Like your brain goes, there's too many choices.
Overload.
Yeah. Like I don't even know what's good here anymore.
Less is more.
Yeah. Yeah. Like
it's like the Cheesecake Factory.
The Cheesecake right, Factory menu.
I went in there and I didn't even get cheesecake. Yeah. It's like the one thing I was thinking of getting. There's too much
you got
stuff
overwhelmed.
On the menu.
Yeah. You got chicken tenders and we're happy.
They're trying to make a dab tool or a roach clip purchase and they end up getting a banger because they're like too hard, too many choices.
So we started limiting down the colors and
initially on our website it was like light, dark, and or orange. Those are the options. And you don't know what you're getting. Like it's one of the it's something light, it's something dark.
But that's the beauty of it, though, because it is a natural product. It, like you expect variability in terms of the wood, the grain, the color, how the stain takes, like all that stuff. As like
there's
as
no
a consumer.
Stain.
No stain.
These are the original colors. I mean, the colors we have now in our lineup. So we've got
really
Paduk. It's an African.
Those are all the natural colors.
Purple Heart.
That's even more impressive. I assume they were stained. This wow.
I thought it was stained too.
Everything's natural.
You could cut your tool in half. It would look the same all the way through. It's not dyed, stained, or lacquered or anything. It's just the natural, beautiful colors of these hardwoods.
We have a clear wax, natural wax we buff in. So
That's even more impressive.
Even the oils from your hands go into your tools and make the colors even richer.
And that's the thing. We've been talking a lot about roach clips, but dabbers are our main thing. Yeah. Like it's everyone knows this for dabbers. This is like the origin story. We still do sell roach clips. Like there's still a huge market for them, but dabbers is where we're like killing it. Like that's dabbing is just taking off. And you want to tell the story of like how you started, or how you figured out we could take a roach clip handle and start making dabbers?
Well, it was at an industry event in 2011 and a trade show, B2B trade show. And they had their after hour parties. We were at one of them, and
in Vegas.
In Vegas, and the guys, they were dabbing up in the bedroom, and I hadn't tried it yet. I knew about it. And somebody had come up to me and said, "Do you have anything for dabbers?" I said, "Well, anything for dabbing?" I said, "Well, what's dabbing?" And he looked at me like I was from Mars and marked out. But anyway, so that same week, we were at this party, and we got dabbed up. I got dabbed up. He dabs me up tonight. Very nice rig. And in those days, there were no dabs. They were nut picks, or
dental tools. Or
something. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
He had a nut pick. He dabs me up, puts it down on the table, and the table is a board that is sitting on our knees. You know, in a bedroom in a hotel. So he puts it on the table, rolls right off and under the carpet. And I said, "Well, that nice. I could do something about." Slogan was they rock but they don't roll. And that's fantastic.
I love that.
And of course it took us an hour to even get up, and then we got to the car, and I said, "I'm perfectly capable of driving. I don't know where the fuck we're going." drove around Vegas for an hour and a half until we spotted the tropic, where we were staying.
And it was like half a mile from where you were.
Next door.
It was on the same strip, four doors down. You could have just walked there.
Next door.
That was our introduction to dabbing.
Yeah. But after that, like that year, they started figuring out, like, how do we get titanium into our tools? You've like bought some raw rods and like balls, and you started like sculpting titanium in the basement. Like in addition
That's
to the roast,
wow.
Everything we did, we got good advice from good friends. I was wondering, how the hell do you mill titanium? And I had a friend from Hawaii who said, "Sir, sanding, simple as that."
Let me just show you a simple thing that people
then
always
we'll get back.
Something that people always love about our tools is that when you put them down, they don't roll. So it's like, once you're dabbing, like something that you always have to think about is where am I putting this after I take this dab?
Yeah.
So it's like, is it going to fuck my table surface up? Sorry, pardon my French. Like, is it going to, is it going to roll? Is it going to roll off? So it's like, basically, it's a no look put down. Like while you're dabbing, you just put it down. You don't have to worry.
No look.
The tips don't touch the table no matter what way you put them down. So you don't have to worry about, like, last night I was taking that toothbrush dab. And after I was done, I didn't have to worry. When I put it down, it's not going to mess up the tablecloth. Like, we're doing it on our trade show tablecloth. That's how confident I was that, like, this glob of wax is not going to screw this tablecloth up because it doesn't touch the table. It's like the most convenient thing.
Oh, no doubt.
And hygienic.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Convenient, hygienic. They rock, but they don't roll. God, I love that. Mike, I interrupted you. You had something.
No, I was going to say, one of the things that strikes me with your entire product line is the quality of it. So, I mean, we were talking about the handles and the unique wood materials and the beauty of them, but the fact that you're using titanium is super impressive. These things have to last forever, I would assume, right? I would think that this thing is going to be like, you buy it once and you've got it for a lifetime, as long as somebody doesn't steal it or you lose it. One or the other.
Right. Or if you have a very hungry dog, that's the other
engine. Yeah. Dogs like
Dogs are the biggest danger to a wooden.
Yeah.
But that's good for our customer, but not good for us.
Yeah,
well, I was going to say.
We don't sell anymore to them,
Well, some people will collect them. They'll buy other woods. Collectors. We've got four different tip styles. We've got two different handle sizes. So it's like, you have a lot of options. But we design these over many years to be like the perfect feeling, look beautiful, the perfect function. I mean, unlike a dabber company now that might just like be like, "Oh, those are great tips. Let me do those tips." And like not have to do all the hard labor and work, just kind of like, we're just going to take what they've built and then do something with it. This is like a long over 12 years development. And we're dabbers. We use the tools. We understand what you want out of a dabber. So we make it because we can make it.
Tell about the tip.
Oh yeah, you designed this. She designed this tip. The tip of the blade are probably our most favorite blade.
Best part
of the favorite tool, because it has a curved edge like a butter knife. We originally called it the butter blade, the saw scoop. We had other names for the tools, but really, like, you designed this having a curved edge and like a kind of a sharp edge, so you can do cutting, you can do scraping like the interior of a
generally jar really easy. Says, why don't you curve one so it can get stuff out of the jar?
Like this type of tip didn't exist before, and now like you're starting to see people creating these tips.
Wow.
It's like, dude. I think it's the sincerest form of flattery to do that. Yeah. But like, absolutely. Just someone needs to know the origin story, that this is the original. And what you're buying is a knockoff of something that she designed. That's kind of
that is incredible. And did you guys know that there was going to be a market for this? Or did it just organically, like word of mouth, grow? Because I'm so interested in like when you decided to invest more into it, when you saw that, you know, there had to be almost this business behind it and not just this side hustle.
It's like the inflection point.
Right.
Good question.
We kept being asked. Right. And
Deb was still working a day job the first 5 years of the...
Longer even.
They started this job when they're in like 61.
So I was making these things in the basement.
And I still had my art director job, and I'd come home and I'd work on Mystic Timber at night.
And she did all the graphic design for it, and all the presentation stuff, and
the sales,
marketing stuff,
something like that.
Wow.
So, was there a single point when you realized, okay, let's do it, we're all in?
Right.
When we started hiring people, yeah.
And also, when you go to a trade show, and people like, originally there was a kit for Beasts and there was a kit for Dabbers. When you go to a trade show and you're selling 10 to 1 kits on Dabbers to Beasts, it's like, oh, I guess Dabbers is our thing now. This is it. Like, dabbing is taking off.
We had to accept. I had, for years when I was making the roast clips, said, geez, this would make a great product. And I just, you know, toss that off. You know, then when I lost my job in 2009, I said, well, let's go for it. So, you know, see if we can make a little bit of, you know, side money on this or something like this. You know,
and get into Dabbers.
Took a year to find out that the roast clip market alone was not going to sustain us. And then serendipitously we ran into the dabbing, which was just starting to take off.
It's like something he didn't,
and it had no tools. So it was like, you know, boom.
What, like, I didn't realize when I got into cartooning and illustration that when he had a career in cartooning and illustration, he was also dealing weed. So he had a supplementary form of constant income. I didn't know you needed a second job to actually make it as an illustrator or cartoonist. But it's like the same with roach clips. It's like, we're not going to make it on roach clips alone. Dabbers are also, they're actually selling better. And then it became like the main product, which is dope. Cause like, no, I like dabbing is so fun. Like, can I just put it out there for anyone who doesn't dab and is like cautious about trying dab? Cause you've heard horror stories of people coughing their lungs out or like going in so hot and like scalding your throat and stuff like that. Like, those are bad experiences. That's not the way to dab. That's a horrible way to set someone up. Like, if they give them too big a dab the first time and it just like wrecks you, like, cause your body's not equipped to take that kind of a strong dose of like those pure chemicals. Like, you're taking the cannabinoids in their pure, like, straight form. It's so clean. It's such a clean, concentrated, unadulterated version of weed. Like, as I was dabbing last night, Dirty Dank Jersey blew a joint smoke and like it right up in our faces. And I could feel the chemicals in it. I could feel there's weed in there, but it was also weighed down by like roughage and like the feeling of like nature. And like, you could feel the trees, you could feel the leaves in it. When you just took that pure THC that I had just taken a little earlier, like the pure version of that hash, it was like, I can see, like, if I wasn't high on this already, that would be amazing. But right now it's like, I'm in this like glowing state of 710 and some 420 cloud just rolled over. And it's like, I'm not ready to indulge in that later. Like, once we got back to their house and like went up to their private smoke area, like then we did some joints. But we also did dabs again. Like, we had a crazy night. That was so fun.
No, I appreciate, look,
sorry for talking.
No, Colin, look,
I love it.
We have a lot of people that are what we call kind of curious, and they don't know what they want to get involved. They want to alleviate pain or something, but they don't know what delivery method is going to work for them. So information like you just shared about dabbing is really, really good for our audience. Yep. And I really
that's
thank
where
you
I was going with that. Yeah, let me expand on that. just let me, sorry, I don't hate to cut you off, but I forgot to like even say my whole point. It's like, if you're into cannabis and consuming it in some way or form, this is what we always say to people at trade shows. It's like, first, one of the things we ask is like, how do you consume cannabis? Mm-hmm. And have you ever tried dabbing? And it's like, a lot of people they have this just stigma against it. Like, it's too scary. It's too strong.
Torch.
Yeah. Like the torch and everything. It looks like it looks like smoking crack or something, 'cause you got all this glass and whatnot. But really, it's like, if you like cannabis in one form, you're really denying yourself to just experiment with the other forms of it. I had no idea I would like edibles. I had no idea I would like drinkables. Like, drinkable weed is a fun, different experience. Like, they're all different forms of high. It's like they're opening different doors in your mind and your endocannabinoid system that you're not used to opening. So when I tried dab the first several times, I remember I'll just try to emote the feeling. I would be sitting there on the couch and be like, this is so fun. Like, this is, wow. I am feeling, this is so, feels so good. Like, I know what Delta 9 feels like. And this is like Delta 9, but different and more like a different form of it that feels like really, really interesting and good. Yeah. I encourage everybody to give it a shot and like do it responsibly. Try it with someone who knows what they're doing. They're not trying to overdose you. They're not trying to give you way too big a dose. Baby dose, like, yeah, the first time you try it. Like, start with a grain of rice size, or like half a pea,
or half a pea,
or a pea, like somewhere in there.
Doesn't take much.
And just give it a shot. You know, it'll give you a couple hits. You'll get to, and you don't have to finish it. Like, you can start taking hits. It's okay to cough. The coughs feel good. They hurt, but they also feel good. It's hard to explain unless you've tried it. Yeah. It's like, you know, those coughs are getting you higher. It's like, this is great.
Yeah. One of the big mistakes we made in the old days too is you take the smoke in and hold it as long as you could.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't do anything to enhance the high.
No, not with dab.
Really?
You don't want
or
if you
flower.
Hold it in, you cough more.
Yeah, you don't want wax just
inhale
sticking around in your lungs like that. You want it in and out.
In and out. Yeah, it's not something to come in and hold.
It's not
That's a pro tip. That's good.
It'll make you cough. It'll make you cough for 10 minutes.
Everything you want out of that hit is in you the moment you take it.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Cannabis consumption education here on the Infuse Show. I absolutely love it. Go ahead.
I just have one more question about, in terms of like the market and the business of Mystic Timber, is that you're definitely touching and connecting with this community, because dabbers is an identity. So it's a group of people that all identify together, and that's, you know, the nature of a community is what they share in common. So as new people get into dabbing, because I'm seeing a lot of rigs, a lot of automation, a lot of pens, so that they take those scarier elements out of it, the intimidating torching, or, you know, the not knowing what I'm doing if I do it wrong. So they're removing that. Is that any, do you have any comment on that? Is that good? Is that bad? Is that the first step? Is that not safe? I'm just really interested, from somebody who's a pro about dabbing, is look at the direction dabbing's going, and I'd love to hear a comment.
Can I handle this one?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So basically, I think like anything, when you're just getting started into something, you're going to get the lowest level gear, the cheapest lift, the easiest entry point into this new hobby that you have. So like when you're just starting dabbing, you're trying other people's stuff, you're using their tools, you're using their rigs, they're introducing you to it. You don't have all the equipment yet. And that makes sense. And if they have a Mystic Timber, then you're starting off with the best, because you're like, this is what a dabber should feel like. If you get a cheap dabber after that, you're going to be like, this doesn't compare. But usually people will start with a shitty like metal dabber, whatever they get for like $2-$8, somewhere in the low $10. Yeah, steel piece of crap that's gonna, you know,
not
either break or not feel good in your hand. And they'll get like, and we encourage, this is a great way to go about it. If you don't want to have to invest in a torch right away, mood mats, all this stuff, you can get like some kind of e-device, like an X Vape or a Puffco or like a Focus V or something. Like a Carta, one of those
electronic nails.
An e-nail, something like that. That's simple. You don't have to worry about actual open flames. You load it and close it. You don't need a special separate carb cap if you don't want to. Like the easiest way that you can carry it. It's portable, you know, easy to load, whatever. That's the first beginner like move. But you're not going to get any like heady credit for having that. You're not going to like, it's sort of like the basic thing. It's not about that. It's just like, this is what I have personally. I'm not going on social media trying to flaunt that I'm using this. It's just, I have this, you know, this is something I can get my medicine with. And that's an awesome way. If you're not out there doing it like online and really trying to show off or anything, or just trying to build connect with the community, the head, right. that there is levels of like getting more into dabbing. Like it's mm-hmm. almost like leveling up as a stoner. Like you're building your tolerance. You're getting like, you start to realize, oh, there are these artists that make stuff just for the thing I love. You know, it's mm-hmm. like they're artists that make these amazing tools. They're artists that make these amazing rigs. That like just artists that make carb gaps. Just artists that make pearls. That just artists that make bangers. You know, like, and you start to learn the whole culture and learn, you know, like what's better than what and what like evenly yeah, what heats. You like you know, there are terps or V's and things like that that cook a banger perfectly evenly. You don't need a torch. There are like ways around it. But you start to build your sesh kit, kind of like you start to build any collection uh-huh. and you start to understand strains and you're testing out different strains and seeing how they interact with your body, because everybody's endocannabinoid system, as you guys know, is different. So you don't know exactly how or how much. It's all experimenting on yourself. Like you're the chemistry experiment being experimented on, but also experiencing it. So you figure out which ways not only it makes you feel physically, but also mentally, like what it does for you mentally, and also like pain relief wise, what it does for you. Like it's all this stuff that they never teach this. This is stuff you have to learn, and from other stoners giving you advice of what works for them. Like I think it's one of the most valuable things about a community is like people are so willing to share knowledge, share information about what works and like what gets you a better session. Like it's set and setting too, like the community, the people you're seshing with and the vibe and the music and everything, like all adds to it. And like as you become more of a sophisticated stoner or like more into it and a more heady collector, like you just become more part of that community, and it's like a very loving, fun community. So cool
it is. And you let me say this, you serve that community well, and the community of people that are curious well too, with your social, Colin, because please check out at Mystic Timber, because they do a lot. No, I mean this wholeheartedly. They do a lot to educate and to take the fear away or the confusion, because Mike and Francesca and I know people, but yeah, I think I'm going to get in a dab and I got to run to the head shop. They come back with stuff they don't need or dressed as a Ghostbuster. And you're like, you need a backpack. Get rid of that. You don't need.
Right.
If you follow at Mystic Timber, you're going to learn a lot. You're going to get connected to this community, and it's a really, really well run page. My credit to you. I wanted to as we're wrapping up our time together here. I did want to. All three of us are curious of what. Tell us what's coming up. What's next? What's big news? I know you had some big news to share about the state of Pennsylvania, just to the north of us, huh? Tell our audience about that.
Well, we just got approved to be on the list of medical and marijuana approved devices in Pennsylvania.
All right.
By the Pennsylvania Board of Health. So like that's a very small number of tools have been. So it's kind of like our scoops have a measured dose. So you can, if you're using it as a medicine, you can take the exact same dose every time. It's one of the few products that you can do that with. So it's kind of a cool thing that now we're going to be able to be sold in dispensaries. It's a hard barrier to cross. And I think this will open us up to other states that have hard restrictions on getting into dispensaries. Because up until recently, dispensaries have been pure, like flower or flower and concentrate. Oh, we got a new follower. We've got one of those Smurls, so every time we get a follower, the thing like spins. It's
fun. Real time.
That was me.
Yeah. It was because of the plug.
And I just also don't want to scare anyone away about education. Like, we mix our education into just our regular filming our content, filming our lives, and filming like making the tools and all that stuff. It's like we try to entertain, but it's also just being stoned and having a fun living your life filming it. Like that's, I think naturally we're have a funny, weird rapport with one another. You know, we all have our own things. These guys are like kind of grandparents. I'm like the kind of uncle that got into smoking very late in life. Like I didn't start smoking until I was 38. I'm 45 now, so I haven't had much time getting high because I was fucking traumatized by him getting arrested when I was a kid. And I'm like 9 years old, cops coming in my bedroom with a fucking gun, looking around the house for some kind of massive weed stash, which didn't exist. Like I was so against, not against weed, but like when you're a stoner like these guys, like every conversation turns into weed, and now I'm that guy. I knew that would happen. Like I didn't want to start smoking because I knew my whole life would become about it. Because it's like once you realize what it can do for you, especially like as an artist, I went so many years of my life without using weed and just being a very creative person already. The weed just, it takes me on roller coaster rides of thought where I can just press a recorder and start talking like stream of consciousness, coming up with ideas, brainstorming. It's done amazing things for me. So like now I'm a huge advocate. Like I can't talk enough about how this is like amazing.
Look, we know, and I, like you said, no, it is it's a wonderful window into the company and the family. And I said this to Colin on the phone, but I want to share it with you guys. You're I speak for the whole Infused team. Like, you're an easy bunch to root for in this world. Like, you really are.
Yes.
And it's because you're so willing to share not only your knowledge, but your personalities with people too. Yep. And you've shared so much with us today. I am so grateful for your time. I wanted to say this before
we're from Jersey. We
tell everyone, please visit mystictimber.com. Check out their selection. Please check out the social. See what they've got going on.
We do have one more thing we wanted to plug.
Plug away.
So we finally invested in a laser so we can do custom co-brands and like collabs much easier. Like, up until now, we've had to take someone's logo, send it to our like former supplier in California that would make these
brand maker.
Like, they would make a brand like out of metal, send the like hot iron brand back. We'd have to hot iron press it into the tools. And it was just time consuming and like made it financially very hard to get someone to do a collab or co-brand with
us. People have been asking us for years, can we have our logo on your tools too? And for years we said, no, they're Mystic Timber. And now we're like, well, why not? You know, why not have that? And so people are like, wow, you're doing it now.
That's opened up
minimum purchase.
Not even though, like right now, like we're just trying to like get this out there and show that we're doing it. So like even small runs, like not super small, but like we will do really small runs with an individual store.
Wedding. And for weddings.
Yeah, weddings.
Weddings. Wedding conventions now too. There are a lot of green weddings happening currently.
Yes.
The whole backside of this pocket, we can do like a co-brand with your logo, your whatever design, and even an extra side. So like, really want to
wedding date,
the date and names. We just did that.
There's so many possibilities.
Born on date.
Bill from Invest in Headies is getting married this month, and we just did their whole wedding party. All the like side pieces on long handles. So like, people who are getting into the wedding world of Canna Weddings, this is another opportunity.
You know,
have a Mystic Timber dab bar at your wedding.
My head's spinning.
And mine is too, Mike. And I know I famously said, Francesca, no more weddings. Let's just send a gift. However, if it's a dab bar wedding, invite the Infused show. We're going to come, do the show. We'll dab with you on the Infused show, my friends. We always just like to have a little bit of fun at the end with one quick question that Francesca does. It's her patented would you rather scenario. Are you guys willing to play with us real quick?
Sure.
Okay.
Francesca, take it away.
I'm excited because it's my favorite month and we're coming up on my favorite holiday. And I force Nick to watch all the scary movies that I can make him watch this month. And so I have a very scary would you rather, potentially. Would you rather have to spend a night alone in an abandoned, broken down amusement park or a night alone in a very old, creepy, solitary cemetery?
Ooh, who wants to leave off?
I have a story that goes right into that.
They're about to leave. That's a long story.
Yeah, it's a long story.
Colin with the save.
Cut.
It's a great story, but it's a long story.
You raise a ghost on Halloween.
We'll do a micro dose.
We'll put that out separate.
So, Colin, what would you pick?
I think the amusement park, because I would bring all my like recording and camera gear, and I would get some of the coolest footage of Mystic Timber on all in front of all those scary rides. I would turn that into a content creation event, man.
Can you tell he's in marketing?
Just a little bit.
Deb, what scenario for you?
Well, I used to live next to a cemetery, and I didn't find them that creepy, really. I think I'd find the amusement park more interesting.
More interesting. The man known as Jorgie Jorgensen. Bruce, what are you picking?
Well, cemetery. Did it once, would do it again.
You've already picked it. You went in the past and picked it.
Mike Patterson, you're up.
Amusement park all day. Because I feel like there's more areas to explore. And at a cemetery, you know there's dead people there. So
I'm scared of the dead. I'm scared of the potential clowns and stuff I'll run into.
Leftover clownage that's all over that park. I'd pick the cemetery, the amusement park creep the hell out of me, Francesca.
Yeah. I'm 100% cemetery for no other reason than it's just grass, and it's going to be grassy, so it's going to be softer to lie down. Oh, yeah. And I feel like there's a beauty in cemeteries. So really? I definitely, yeah. But there's one person we haven't asked yet, Nick.
Yeah, the man, another Jersey legend, Frank Rego, producer extraordinaire. Give me way in here, my friend.
I got to go with amusement park because I might just go to the concession stand and just start making me food just to pass the time while I'm waiting. So
abandoned amusement park.
Frank travels with ingredients.
I just plug it in.
If I learned anything from Zombieland, there'll be a stash of Twinkies in one of those concession stands. It'll be
exactly.
Okay. They stay for good forever.
You can deep fry it.
There. Oh my God, guys. This has been an absolute pleasure for our team at The Infuse Show. Today, we've been talking
us as well.
With the family behind Mystic Timber. We've been talking to Bruce, Deb, and Colin Jorgensen. We're going to send our best to your daughter up in Canada, too. A complete family affair over at Mystic Timber. Visit mystictimber.com. Follow them at Mystic Timber on social media. You're going to be glad that you did. And just bring our cannabis community closer. So, my friends, thank you so much for joining us on the Infuse Show today.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much.
Infuse fam, you're officially Mystic Timber fam. You're part of us.
Let's go.
Leveled up.
proud members of the Mystic Timber fam, just south of them down here in Delaware. For Mike and Francesca and our producer, Frank, I'm Nick. We'll see you next time on The Infuse Show. Bye-bye, guys.
Bye, everyone.
Yes. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks,
bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Season 1 of Dope History is now available at dopehistory.com. Dope History weaves you through the lives of those who have been touched by cannabis or have had an influence on the events that shaped our laws or relationships with this plant. You'll hear tales from Frenchie Cannoli, Keith Strop, Eddie Lepp, Tom Alexander, Ed Rosenthal, Wolf Seagull, Jorge Cervantes, and Tommy Chong. Available now at dopehistory.com.